From the studios of KXCI Community Radio in Tucson, Arizona, I'm King David McKenzie. Here's some of how the world is treating itself today, the 25th of June, 2009, one of those days when you remember where you were when you heard, well, by now you know what that news is. I distinctly recall the setting when I heard the unexpected deaths of other popular culture icons. Elvis Presley, John Lennon, and Bing Crosby come most immediately to mind. You will notice that this program is not being released to the internet until around 10 p.m. Arizona time, 8 hours later than usual. Well, I had woken up at 6 o'clock this morning, could not shake off the overwhelmingly lethargic feeling, and decided to fall back to sleep, which I did. I woke back up at noon, and at that point I heard the news that actor Farrah Fawcett had died from the cancer she'd been battling for the last few years. She had begun her career as visual chewing gum for 1970s American Men, whether it was alongside the great Joe Namath in a commercial for Noxzema shaving cream or as one of the leads on Charlie's Angels, the private eye series that made Mannix look like Shakespeare by comparison. After a few theatrical movies, she made valiant efforts to switch her image by appearing in Broadway plays and TV and theatrical movies about tough social issues like sexual assault in Extremities and domestic violence in The Burning Bed. She then seemed to fade into the twilight zone of Hollywood celebrity in which everyone knew exactly who she was, but she hadn't done anything really noticeable in the last, dozen years or so. Then in 2006, she was diagnosed with anal cancer, and she sought to use her celebrity to heighten the world's consciousness about that disease. A couple of months back or so, there was an NBC special that she narrated herself about her cancer, which I'm sure NBC will repeat in a few days from now. Farrah Fawcett was 62 years old, and that was the death today that was expected. I still felt sluggish until about 2 o'clock, took a bath, and fixed myself a late brunch of spaghetti. Then after that, I pushed myself down to the mailbox. There was none. And then to the bus stop to come down to KXCI and try to do the Thursday podcast and gather material for the local news insert of KXCI's broadcast of This Way Out, which I also do. The bus trip from my apartment to KXCI usually takes about half an hour, and it was during that half an hour that in Los Angeles, Michael Jackson was being taken comatose to UCLA Medical Center, where by the time I got to the KXCI studios, he had been declared dead by the LA Medical Examiner. It was apparently from a heart attack, but they're not sure at this hour, and the LAPD have opened a criminal investigation into Jackson's death while stressing that they have no evidence of criminal wrongdoing as yet. Jackson was 50 years old, or perhaps more fitting would be the typo that appeared on the Associated Press wire when Orson Welles died, which would make Michael Jackson 50 years odd. This was the death I was not expecting. David Brinkley once recalled that on the August 1977 day when the bulletin bells rang on the NBC teletypes that Elvis Presley had just died, and I don't think it particularly out of line to interject here that while Presley was 8 years younger than Jackson at death, Jackson never seemed to be anywhere near Presley's age at any similar point in their careers. And Brinkley had a split attitude about the importance of the news. He didn't particularly care for Presley's music, but he knew a hell of a lot of people did. So he made the decision to lead off with that item on that evening's NBC Nightly News. Similarly, I have to say that there's only two recordings of Jackson's that I particularly like. Got to Be There and the Jackson 5 version of Corner of the Sky from Pippin. And I can pretty much leave the rest. Having said that, he was undeniably a great performer, and he touched a hell of a lot of people. His album Thriller sold 40 million copies in the vinyl edition, and it's worth noting that one of those vinyl pressings from 1982, with slight edge wear on the cover and a bend on the bottom right corner, was put up for auction on eBay last Friday with a starting bid of only $4. The closing bid, 3 hours after Jackson died, was $1,031.58. One is reminded of the clearing out of record shops of every Presley record that afternoon in 77. Coincidentally, I happened to be on my way to a record shop when I heard the news about him, and instead of whatever I planned to buy, I got a copy of the Sun Sessions LP instead. And that bleak December night and following morning in 1980, when Lennon was assassinated, and you couldn't buy a single Beatle or Lennon record by supper time. And just as astonishingly for an American 48-year-old like me, MTV is playing wall-to-wall music videos again. I honestly think that this is the first time they've done that since the day in 1994 when Kurt Cobain's suicide was discovered. Lost in the furious shuffle is the fact that yet another hit recording star died this morning. Sky Saxon, frontman and bassist for The Seeds. Their big hit was the 1966 item entitled Pushin' Too Hard. They also put out one of the better live garage rock albums of the period. Since Saxon, whose birth name had been Richard Marsh, had given so many birth years since first hitting the charts, from 1937 to 1946, depending upon his mood, nobody at the Associated Press or Variety knew exactly how old he really was. But he certainly was a memorable figure of 60s rock, and his passing deserves mention here as well. But today was a day on which the childhood of many Americans and Canadians turned sharply dimmer in the memory banks. Shortly after Jackson's death was announced, a sloppy reporter for the Australian Nine TV network claimed comic actor Jeff Goldblum had died when falling off a cliff at a New Zealand golf course he was allegedly making a movie on. It turns out that Goldblum was actually in New York City all day making a movie with Harrison Ford, and his death had also been rumored on the internet around the same time. Both performers are perfectly well, and as a result, I think I'll go home after recording this and watch one of Goldblum's better movies, Between the Lines. After a day like this, I need to see something that'll make me chuckle. If you have any material you'd like for me to include in the next few days, just email me at baronofarizona@gmail.com. That's baronofarizona@gmail.com. And please indicate where you're listening to this program from. In Tucson, I'm King David McKenzie. Until Monday, have yourselves some peace and oranges. Thank you.